Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, we're back today. Topic, House Friend Backyard Wealth, Backyard Wealth Club. We want to talk about how you can earn some money, start a business, start a side hustle, whatever you want to call it, with your backyard. Even if you don't have a backyard, if you know somebody who has a backyard or is a little bit creative on finding people who have a backyard, you can make some money. So that's what we're going to talk about today, House Backyard Wealth Club. That's us. And hopefully you can join us. Okay, now, we're still in our morning motivation. So, I'm trying to find something for you guys. Oh, 619, you guys have got any trending topics you want to put out there? Now's the time to call, 619-768-2945. And let's see, okay, we're getting close. Well, oh, wait a minute. All right, let's play. We haven't played this in a while.
because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today, and we were here yesterday, but we had a, what happened was made a mistake when I originally set the timer to start, which the show went on at, well, the timer was set for 9 a.m. Okay, I didn't realize I made that mistake until some hours later. And then in between that, I ran across another podcast actually a vlog, where I got caught up listening to that during the regular start time and hours of this podcast. So what I did was when I went back in and we did do, I don't know, 45, 50 minutes yesterday, but we did it, like an hour and a half past our regular time. So that's what happened yesterday. So today, really announcement, we'll take a call or two. But our title for today's live stream is House Wren Backyard Wealth Club. All right, now, I explain what the House Wren is for people who haven't heard it before. House Wren is essentially a bird where prior to mating season or during mating season, the male House Wren builds like 11 nests. And then after he has those nests built, or at least builds five, and then while he's in the process of building an additional six, on average, he built about 11. After he gets them built, the female house wrens, he'll show them to prospective mates. If one likes one to her particular liking, then they mate and start a family and all that. So that's why we call our club a house wren. We're house wrens. All right. Now, we had on a guest in the last couple of weeks that he was talking about house hacking. And house hacking basically is a short, brief definition, paraphrasing him as close as possible, but not exactly. It's essentially squeezing out as much money as you can from a property that you already have. We're not talking about a duplex or a fourplex or a fiveplex, someplace that is designed as an income property, but taking a traditional non-income property and then doing the house hacks or finding the hacks, ways that you can make money from that. It could be renting out the basement. It could be renting out a bedroom. It could be converting a garage into a rental property. It could be, in this case, putting a tiny house in his backyard or airstream in the backyard. It could be renting out the carport. So there are various types of hacks. So Let me see. Okay, so today, briefly we'll cover Backyard Wealth, Acres of Diamonds. We might play that by Russell Conwell. House Hacks, which I just gave you a brief, rough definition. You can start a backyard business. House Rent Habits, and I just basically told you that. Meet, Greet, Eat, and Build, and I'll tell you what we'll be doing with those. TP Communities, I just discovered those within the last hour, okay, or 90 minutes. Now, two things we're going to have a floor building business and a deck building business. We'll talk about that. That'll be part of our backyard business. Backyard camping, tent rentals, carport rentals, deck rentals, Airbnb, national parks. I got quilt TPs on here as well. So we'll briefly cover those, plus take a call or two on that. And let's see. We'll be back right after this.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy.
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people. His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought, an idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them, and in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself. He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate, as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value. And then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell and subsequently thousands of others was the obvious fact that each of us is at this moment standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar round table, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects, that by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, what can I do to increase my service to my customers? He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big, shiny car. This average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, I ought to be in his business instead of mine. You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses. There are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures. People do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1 gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. We poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, there lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. That only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12. Remember the story of the Acres of Diamonds. Zero Nightingale, thank you.
Okay. Acres of Diamonds, I want you to keep that in mind. Once again, today's we're talking about backyard wealth. And there is untapped wealth, I would say, in many or the average backyard. I want you to, now, like Ansel Troy, he was on here last week and the week before last, and he shared with us how, because he considers himself a house hacker, he took his backyard in Oakland, California, and turned it into a cash cow, making, I guess, what, $9,000 a month doing Airbnb, or using the Airbnb platform. Now, I was a member of Airbnb. At the time, I wasn't trying to rent out nothing. I was planning educational events. Then the pandemic came up. Then I just shut that whole thing down. But after listening to Ansel, I put the app back on my phone. And if you don't have the Airbnb app on your phone and you're looking for a side hustle or a full-fledged business opportunity, I would suggest put it on your phone and do some exploration of it. Now, if you do have Airbnb on your whatever device that you're using, laptop, phone, tablet, what have I want you to go to Airbnb right now. We're going to do a little, we're going to see the opportunities, because Airbnb, in my opinion, has really improved the opportunities on their site. Matter of fact, there's one thing I'm looking for you to do. All right, so go into the explore section and matter of fact, Airbnb, they used to have entertainment events and educational events. I don't know if they still do. They got a wish list section, they got a trip section. Let's see. Okay, well, let's go to the explore section. Here's what they have on here now. Let's see. Yeah, you know what? We're just going to explore Airbnb because this is all part of Acre and Dunder. All right, so if you've got beachfront property, there's a category for you to make money with your beachfront property via Airbnb. If you have a cabin, they have a section on here I'm looking at. You know, one's got a cabin for $169 a month. Another one has another cabin for $238 a month. Excuse me, a night. Not a month, a night. $175 a night, $189 a night. Here's an A-frame cabin for $255 a night. Here's another cabin for $75 a night. Cabins on there all over the place. They have an OMG, which I guess, oh my God, which these are more exotic rentals, $364 a night, $649 a night. That's under the OMG category. If you wanted to get the experience of a mansion, here's one in Langley, Kentucky, for $1,433 a month, a night. Here's one in Great Falls, Virginia, $3,000 a night. That's if you want the mansion experience. Let's see. Here's another mansion in Earlyville, Maryland, for $831 a night. They have them in Mexico, too, so that, you know, those who want to get the mansion experience, there's a category for you to look at several of them around the world. Then they have another section here, Amazing Views. And all these are basically de facto home-based businesses. Okay. And they've got ocean views, bay views. Here's one in Miami. Ocean view for $282 a night. Let's see. If you prefer treehouses, you want the treehouse experience. Or if you have a treehouse or you plan on building a treehouse, I'm looking at one here in Georgia for $295 a night. Another one in North Carolina, treehouse, $175 a night. Here's another one in another part of Georgia for $257 a night. All right. If you have lakefront property, or went to Lake for Imperial. They have a whole section on here for that. They have a whole section category for tiny houses. If you want to rent a tiny house, you want that tiny house experience, or you're thinking about building a tiny house and renting it out, I'm looking one at Eatontown, Georgia, for $147 a night, tiny house. Phoenix City, Alabama, I have spent a little time there before. Here is a tiny house on stilts for $150 a night. Here's one in Milton, Florida, for $135 a night. Here's another tiny house in Perry, Georgia, for $100 a night. Now, here's a pretty easy tiny house to build. It's an A-frame in Brookville, Florida, and it's $66 a night. That's sort of budget-friendly. Okay. Here's some in somebody's backyard. It's a pet-friendly tiny house. Probably might come under the ADU ordinances in Jacksonville, but this is in somebody's backyard. It's got a privacy fence, $87 a night. Okay. If you have a camper, here's something in Panama City for $240 a night. They have this under the tiny house section. All right. Then they have trending. They have a trending section on here. This is all on Airbnb. They got stuff in Canada, Costa Rica. These are people's backyards in various parts of the world. Greece, Brazil. Okay. Italy. Let's see, amazing pools. If you like the pool scene, you know, swimming and all that, they got places where you've got swimming pools and exotic swimming pools. Let's see, they have a section here called play. So here is a place that's in Kissimmee, Florida. It's called a sports bowling villa in Kissimmee. It's got a bowling lane in it. And rent for $1,031 a night. That's like 45 minutes away from where I'm at right now. Here's another one in Tybee Island, Georgia, $1,350 a night. Interesting ideas. Here's another one. Evart, Michigan. The lanes at Mino Farms Bowling Alley, $600 a night. Pickleball court. Place has got that, plus looks like tennis courts, over $1,100 a night. Man, they've got some. You can get some excellent ideas over this. If you want to get the island experience, if you want to go live on an island, a little small one, a private island, or buy an island and then rent it out on Airbnb, here's Cayos Coconinos, Honduras, for $3,000 a night. There you have access to a whole private island. Belize City is a private island for $4,500 a night. Pearl Cays in Nicaragua, $450 a night. I'm still looking at islands, man. Okay. Castles, if you want the castle experience, either to stay there or collab with other people. Here's a cabin. I mean, a castle on here in for $1,000 a night. Here's one in Ireland, $652 a night. St. Million, UK. You get the castle experience. Tamar Castle for $3,261 a night. Cleveland, Wisconsin. You can get the castle experience. They have a castle vineyard for $1,015 a night. Clackamanshire, UK. And Dollarbrag. There's Dollarbrag Castle, $430,000. This is a real castle, too. Port Patrick, UK, $1,281 a month. Bolton, New York, there's a castle up there, a little bit over $2,200 a night. That's the castle category. If you have a farm or thinking about getting a farm or collabing with other people to get a farm, here's a farm in Vero Beach, $97 a month. A tour of Florida, $85 a month. Atlanta, Georgia, there's a farm there. Trendy Tiny House Farm. So you get the experience of a tiny house on the farm for $94 a month. Naples, Florida, $835 a month. Tallahassee, Florida, you can stay at the Little Co-op Stay. $50. You know what? And you can reach out to these people. This is social media. We live in the era of social media. You can go on Airbnb and find something that fits your fancy that you might want to get involved with as an entrepreneur, as a backyard entrepreneur, and get their ideas on how they started. Matter of fact, I'm going to contact some of these people and have them as guests. Let's see. So they got a category for that. You got a houseboat. You want to rent that out. Okay. Here's one in France for $194 a night. Now, I'm speaking to you as pick one of these categories, one of these niches, and then with some of these niches, they're niches within those niches. But I'm looking at, I mean, houseboats. Here's one in Peru, $27 a night. Here's one in Colombia, $137 a night. I mean, oh, let's go back to this one in Peru. You can visit exotic, far-flung destinations on a beer budget for a comedy, $27 a night. You can't beat that. Okay. So, hopefully, once again, acres of diamonds. These are the things that ordinary people because I'm getting ideas on this. All right, now let's see. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Airbnb. I'll open up that. Okay, let's see. Amazing Clay, Collins, Castles, Farms, Houseboats, off the grid. Now, that's speaking my language. There's a on here that you as a consumer want to experience the off-the-grid experience, or you have a piece of property that is off the grid. Airbnb has a section just for you, so you can imagine. Whatever that means. They got country side. I can't, okay, now it's coming up. If you got a boat for rent, I mean, somebody's renting out their boat. Well, I guess it's a yacht. $888 a month. Another one for $3,000 a month. Okay, let's see. Containers. You've been talking about shipping containers on here. Here's a shipping container in Waco, Texas. They're renting it out for $184 a month. Here's one in Canada for $134 a month. Here's another one in Waco, Texas, $91 a month. Here's one in Marble Falls, Texas, $72 a night. Then they have a category on new. They got Lux. If you have, they have people with a luxury budgets on here. They have caves for rent on Airbnb. Here's one in France. It was a nice looking cave too. $147 a night. Here's one in Cortez, Colorado, $298 a month. Now, of course, they got these places pimped up and electrified, but still. Here's another one in France for $107 a month. Somebody took a cave and turned it into a home. They got a whole section on Airbnb for that. Let's see. Camping. Speaking to my backyard people, I'm looking at one in South Carolina. This person basically has a nice carport, and carports are not difficult to build. We're going to build some and have classes on them. And he rents this out in South Carolina for $66 a month. Now, here is a concept I'm jumping on, and hopefully some of you will jump on with me. A TP community. This person's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at least in this picture, 6 TPs in their on their property. And it's the TPs are not on the ground. They're all built on nice-looking decks. $86 a night. So $86 a night times 6, that's $516 a night at full. I mean, imagine if you just, you know, minimum two-day booking and you just do weekends. So you're making a little bit over $1,000 a weekend, over a little bit over $4,000 a month just on weekends with TPs. That's what this person's doing. Okay. Hold on, I'm waiting for my, okay. So what else do they have on here? Earthships, they have those on here, man. I was really amazed when I saw that. Countryside, let's see, containers, caves, we went through that. Earth homes. All right, well, they call them earth homes, but all right, well, they, some are homes, some are earth ships. And I have participated in building earth ships. I know something about that. And I have some experience really about that. So we're going to hold some camps, I mean, organize on that. National parks. There are 3 national parks in Florida. I'm 45 minutes away from one of them. In my North Florida location, they have dome housing, tropical housing, A-framers, creative spaces, vineyards, bread and breakfasts, top of the world. I got some videos of me top of the world when I was over in Europe. Historical homes, skiing, private rooms. There are people looking for a private room in Ocala, Florida, $85 a night. Cape Coral, Florida, private room, $50 a night. Tampa, Florida, private room, $85 a night. to Simi, Florida. For those who are going to Disney World, this is it's got two single beds in this, $35 a night. Airbnb, man, Airbnb. I'm back on it. I'm gonna be part of a golf community. They have several communities on here for that. You got a barn? Or want to get together with some people to buy a barn? I mean, to build the barn. These are all Acre Diamonds backyard ideas. Here's one in Georgia. But this looks like a yurt. For $133 a night. All right, these are yurts. Geneva, Florida, $150 a night. These are yurts. Oh, you know what? Okay, you know, these are yurts. That's a more upscale tent. Barns. Let's go. What's happening in the barn scene? All right, here's a barn in Virginia, $165 a night. Another barn in Tennessee for $165 a night. And Freeze or Fresh Virginia barn for $105 a night. Here is a corn silo, a former corn silo in Harara, Georgia for $151 a night. Here's a barn in Vero Beach, Florida, $97 a night. They got some for surfers, chef's kitchens. Iconic cities, the Arctic. Jesus, man, look, they have something in Iceland. I got a friend in Iceland. In Iceland, they got stuff for $64 a night, and I guess that's nearing the Arctic Circle. Another one in Iceland. Alaska, Fairbanks of Banks, Alaska, $427 a night. Yellowknife, Canada, $159 a night. Here's a tiny house cabin in Borgarnes, Iceland, $230 a night. Man. Airbnb is off the chain. I really like these. Here's North Pole, Alaska. Here's a place that you can rent for $288 a night. They got places for skiers. Truly, I don't know what that's about. Right, this is Italy. They got a whole section on Italy. If you like to live in a tower, like a castle-like tower or whatever, you got those. Oh, man, Montana, Germany, Ireland, Belgium, Mount Juliet, Tennessee. Somebody took a grain silo. Somebody here in Kenilworth, UK for 209. It looks like they took a water tower and then converted it into living space. If you don't have any ideas, they got them here. Man, they have really desert housing. And I got 10 acres of desert mountains in Texas. They got stuff in New Mexico, Colorado. Oh, man. You can take any one of these ideas. Let's see, Grand Piano, windmills, shepherd's huts. Let's take a look at that. And if you just tune in, go to Airbnb, go to Explore, and check out the categories section. Lots of great backyard ideas. Okay. Lakes. Now, do they still have educational events And I'm going to have to call Airbnb. Let me see. I mean, you know what? I'm going to have to call Airbnb. Like immediately after this program. Let's see. Let me look. Educational events. And if they don't, that's fine. I know how to market myself. Okay, educational events, Airbnb. Orlando Airbnb training events. Airbnb 101 seminar tickets. How to find Airbnb for events. Okay, let's see what they have there. How to find an Airbnb for events. Let's see. Space rentals. Okay. Let's see. Airbnb. I look to call them up. All that too. Okay, I'm on their app. Okay, let's see. For travel, for work. Let's see. Switch to hosting. Wait a minute. Okay. No, I want to switch back to what I had before. Okay, let's see. Switch to traveling. Okay, that's what I want. That. Well, I'm just have to call Airbnb because this site has really been upgraded since. I haven't really looked at it since the pandemic started. That's when I shut it down. But they're up on it. Okay, so. We'll be giving you updates on the daily on this because let's see. Wait a minute. The dog wants water. Wait, sorry. Wait, let me get back in the studio. So. Now, any one of these ideas that you get from Airbnb, you can scale that. So if you find a business model that fits your budget and your liking, you can scale it. You know, just take that one idea, wash, rinse, and repeat. You know, if you find something that can make you $100 a night, all right, do it 10 times. Do it 50 times. Do it 100 times. Okay, do it 1,000 times. You can set yourself up like that. Okay, so we're going to go to the phone lines here, but that's after I got to get the dog some water. So I'm trying to. Find something to play so I can do that and won't be too long. All right, hold on, wait a minute. Here we go. All right, let's play this one. We're right back. Okay, and it's probably Indian Reservation, and I'm sure if you wanted to have an Airbnb experience on that, I'm probably sure there's a few places on Indian Reservations, and we're going to have somebody on from a Native American tribe here, hopefully within the next month or so. All right, so House Rent Backyard Wealth Club, and that's what we'll be doing. Is we'll be building decks, we'll be building floors, we'll be building tiny houses too. But there's basic floor hacks that, by building floors, decks, placing tents, And like I said, they're people. I mean, take the person that's renting out just a regular tent. And I think we got a picture of it. You go to our Facebook page, which is DIY Housing TV. That's on Facebook. That's our page on Facebook. Go to that, DIY Housing Television. And then, let's see. Okay. And then scroll down a little bit, and then you, I've got 8 pictures there of some things I've been talking about today. Backyard projects. So I have, backyard house hacks. Create a side hustle in your or someone else's backyard. And all these I saw on Airbnb. So the top picture is the TP community. You see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 you don't need any electricity. Here it is. You know, next picture below that is somebody built a nice little carport, and simple construction, and rents that out. Now, there's a lot of people that have their own vehicle or camper. Or you can get one yourself and, you know, make it all night. So you got a couple of options there, or more than a couple of options. Then, let's see, below that is another angle of the TP community. Below that is the, we can look, we'll come back there. The Rio Rojo TP community, we're going to come back to that. But it tells you, let's see. Then below that is a picture of a tent in somebody's backyard with a picnic table. And that little tent you can get at Walmart or order it online, you know, Amazon. Then, you know, picnic tables. I got a picnic table I ain't using a long time. I'm going to put it to use now. I then scroll down and tent in somebody's backyard from another angle. A deck with a couple of rocking chairs. A deck is something practical. Then the last picture, couple of hammocks and trees. All right, so let's go, let's explore a little bit more about the Rio Rojo TP community. Okay, wait a minute. Come on, go. Come on now. Let's see. Talk to the dog. You don't know whether you want to go left or right. Come on over here where you can get comfortable. All right, let's see. I'm making sure my mic is open. Okay, it is open. All right, let's see. That was the Rio Rojo, which means red, TP community. All right. Let's see. CPs are making a comeback as TPs are making a comeback as novelty homes until people start living in caves again, not counting Osama bin Laden. The retro movement won't have come full circle, but Richard Reese has headed in that direction with his magnificent low-tech teepees, which he mostly declares are the world's best. Okay. The smallest Reese teepee is a child size with the largest family size, the 20-foot diameter. Tents cost anywhere from $300 to over $3,000. I am going to post this Rio Rojo TP community. That's the name of it. I'm making sure I. All right. Rio Rojo. Oh, man. Wait. Okay. Let me do this again. Okay. Rio. Well, okay. Rio Rojo. Let me spell TP differently. TP community. Or Carlsbad family offers backyard TP rent free to people in need. Okay, let's see what that says. Hip camp. All right. Where the Carlsbad family offers backyard teepee rent-free to people in need. Joel Coles lives with his wife and four sons in a 700-square-foot house in Carlsbad. Let me follow this person on. Okay. I'm looking for Rio Rojo T. Carlsbad, Roadside. Let me go back to Airbnb, get my bearings on this. All right, camping. I think that's where we found them. So let's go to the camping section on Airbnb. Okay. And okay. All right, this isn't okay. Let me scroll down a little bit further. Wait, I'm trying to find out where I came across Rio Rojo Teepee Community. All right, hold on, let me go all the way to the top. Okay. Okay, here it is. Let's see. Rio Rojo TP Community. All right, so that comes under, what's the official name? There's another name here. Let's see. I can contact the host. All right, I'll, okay, well, Rio Rojo Teepee Community. Let me try another way here. We'll put in the state. Well, I can't. Big TPs. But it comes up under images, and then that's a whole bunch of, I don't know, okay. Rio Rojo. Let me see what comes up under that. No. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to have to contact the host. Yeah, I might have to contact the host. All right, well, all right, let's go to the phone lines real quick. Okay. Studio. Okay, okay, 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. Great informative show today.
I'm rediscovering, Airbnb.
Yeah, and you also brought up the house rent, building the decks and floors and tiny houses. And no, that's great stuff. I did wind up getting a phone call today from the blind gentleman that is such a champion up in Chicago. There is a new mayor of Chicago. Mayor Lightfoot is out And the new mayor is in, and we have a meeting
sworn in
to get the homeless. He was sworn in last month, and we've got a meeting with him on June 3rd at 10 o'clock in the morning, and also with the Chicagoland Homeless Coalition. They want to start building these homes and get their people straightened up here. So I love the fact that this mayor is actually doing something, but he put a call to action and set it in a meeting. So at 10 o'clock on June 3rd, there will be that meeting. I did meet another gentleman.
What are they doing? How many vacant homes do you think are in Chicago?
I need to find out that number, but I'm wanting to say that the number is probably somewhere around 30,000.
Okay. That's a lot of vacant homes.
It definitely is a lot of vacant homes. The one thing about it is they're not habitable too. You know, not just being vacant. You know,
right?
If it's vacant, somebody could be figuring something out. But when they're completely blighted, that's a different story. But you know, they've got miles of land that they have already leveled to redevelop. So those are the parts we're going to be going after there, is the ones that they've already put in place for us to do that.
What number did you say, Chris?
Which what?
How many vacant houses did you say?
I'm wanting to say there's probably 30,000 blighted properties.
Well, keep on going. I just looked it up. More than 55,000 vacant homes in Cook County. That's a lot of houses.
That is a lot of houses. And that just happens to be in Cook County. I know that, like, Harvey is not in Cook County. And Harvey, you know, they boarded up 900 houses just in the past year and a half, because people were, you know, killing people in there, doing drugs, raping people, doing all these things. So they closed them all up so they couldn't get in them. But they were also able to solve a lot of crimes and some murders and different things too. So, you know, coming in and cleaning up your community, to me, solves so many problems. And, you know, even old cold case problems. But it's making that effort and actually something happening. I was excited to get the phone call this morning to tell me about the meeting. But, you know, this on Mother's Day, I had a phone call with someone that I was being told that's going to be running on the presidential ballot. His name is Sid McMary. And he's doing a town hall in Lexington, Kentucky in about 9 days now. But I was asked to be there. And the thing about it is this guy's already wrote some books on peace. So, you know, he's got a different mindset of a regular politician. But he's been in the White House, though, through Bush and Obama. So he's got some experience in that direction, but he wasn't there as a politician. He was there as nutrition. He was their yoga and stuff instructor. So Here he's going to be stepping out on the 24. He'll be on the 24 ballot, but he's going to be going on his thing. So, kind of nice that we got somebody that actually does care that might be running.
Right. Let me see. I know somebody that lives in Harvey, by the way. I haven't been there, though. They moved there from New Jersey.
Wow. I'll tell you what.
Well, do they have a crime problem in Harvey? I don't know.
Harvey is the most dangerous city in America.
Hmm.
And that is the city that we were actually able to start a pro football team in this past year. And
okay.
It was to get the kids to stop being violent on the street and use their talent and their ability to go out there and beat somebody without having to physically, you know, have to punch them in the face or shoot them with a gun or rob them. And that city, you know, we've been able to really see a difference in people. But until they get a true change happening, people will still stay complacent and still be doing the same things they was doing. And, you know, self-destruction is a key element that you have control of. I'm talking about it a little bit here on a personal level because my brother, he's kind of been self-destructive. And he's having to pay the price for it right now. Yesterday he went into cardiac arrest and he's sitting in a critical care unit today. And you know, the only thing I ever wished for anybody, and through him as well, was stop trying to disappear out of reality because the reality around you sucks. You want to change your reality, and that's by what you surround yourself with. And a lot of people don't get that choice. But when his physical abilities started going on him, he got more depressed. So this is where we need to really be embracing these people and show them that they can do something else. And that's why I'm working with a gentleman right now that can't really talk that well. He was shot in the face, a young man, and he can't walk. But we've been able, in the past year here, he's really being able to speak a whole lot better. But he's also, he was able to stand up and take a step. And I don't know how many steps he's taken so far. But one thing he took a step to do was take my words and help me by typing them into the computer and helping me put guides together to help people get through their life. So, you know, it takes a tragedy sometimes to get people to change what's going on in their lives. But why? Why do we have to be smacked with reality before we start setting reality straight? And kind of my little thought process is here. I'm sitting here listening. You know, I love listening to you. You know, you'll get on the radio and you'll just sit to talking. And it's not that you're having a conversation with anybody. You're having a conversation with everybody. I think that's what I appreciate about you the most. I think you've really been able to, you know, start to master the craft of informing people. But I just appreciate you, LA, for what you do, and I look forward to knowing that you've got something new to share with people today because you stayed up last night watching videos and learning and educating yourself on a constant basis. You're definitely a reward for every person that gets to hear and share your space.
Well, and the thing we're working on now, Chris, as a matter of fact, I was supposed to call yesterday, is they had the visual component of it where were actually building stuff offline, and then a combination of local, offline, all right, a group of people that you can see offline building stuff, interacting with people during a live stream where they can actually see it. And, you know, that's hopefully we can get something like that going within a week.
You know, you got, I sent you some pictures yesterday. Take those pictures. Take a few of them. I don't know if you want to take them all or not, but if you take some of those and make a post and throw it on the Facebook page, throw it on the Instagram page, because what I sent you a picture of is anything and everything, down to a room with a little roof off the front, you know, just for something. But it's all made of steel, all that steel frame. All those projects have been getting worked on this year, and I was able to get all the
things. Let's see. Now I got let's see. Rebuild your dream home in Detroit for $8,500. Have that you sent me.
It was in the text. It should be just like Google Photos.
And then, where I guess. Oh, you sent me two pictures of that.
Right, it should be a little Google app or something. But I got you. I'm going to send it to you right in a second. Oh, it is. It's the very last text I sent you. I sent it at 5:30 p.m. yesterday. There are hundreds of pictures of all kinds of buildings right there.
Okay, yeah, these are metal frames. Now, metal framing, give us the pros and cons of metal framing versus wooden framing.
Okay. A wood frame will burn. It'll absorb water. It'll grow mold. It'll rot. Termites will eat it. It's not a seismic material. And you have to use a dumpster to build with it. And your insurance cost will be more by you using it. So if you use a metal frame, it's easier to construct. It weighs half the weight of wood. If you order a frame from us, you don't have to use a saw to cut the material. All you have to do is screw it together. Now, it won't burn. It won't absorb water. It's stronger, termite-free, mold-resistant, seismic, recyclable. Build it without a dumpster. Build it cheaper than wood. And you get a 60% discount on insurance versus a wooden home, and that'll help pay your taxes.
Okay. And the tools needed to assemble it.
A screw gun.
That's it?
That's it. You have a tape measure.
Okay.
But a tape measure, a pencil, and a screw gun. Actually, I would suggest, instead of a pencil, a magic marker.
All right.
Yeah, a magic marker works really well. What it is, see, you'll lay the track down on the ground, and you can You can start the tape at one end, and every 2 feet, put a mark. And when you get, and that's where you set the stud. You set the stud on the same side of that mark on each one of those marks, and those studs will be exactly 24 inches apart. And when you do the both tracks the same, mark them exactly the same at the same time. You put one on top, one on the bottom, and they're already marked. You know that they're level. And you put a half-inch screw to it, and it drills itself, and it will stop on its own. Yeah, it's very simple construction, but it's actually very well-built construction once you put it together.
Okay.
And it's all structural steel. All structural steel. If anybody's ever thought of they've seen metal framing, they've seen a flimsy stud that they could shake in their hand. I promise you, I can build a 16-foot stud that you can walk up to with a screw gun, and that stud will not move. Now, if you look at the metal studs you can buy out here, those studs, you have to hang on to it to be able to put a screw in the sheetrock to hold it on there. So that stud will walk on you.
Okay.
Well, these are structural studs. They don't move. They're twice as strong as a wooden 2x4 or 2x6.
Okay.
And they don't rust. They're galvanized. You can leave this package outside with no roof or siding on it for the next 20 years, and it'll still be as shiny in 20 years as it was the day you built it. I hope you wouldn't do that, but you could. That's why if it's raining, you're not worried about your material getting wet.
Right. That's steel or aluminum?
That's steel. It's galvanized steel. And I also have another company. They make they built 1 million homes in the past 10 years, but they did 600,000 foundations last year. They have like 35 patents on their products, but they have a pour-in-place form, aluminum form, that won't rust, it don't corrode, they've got a wonderful product, but now we're going to marry together to where they put in the foundations, instead of them putting up walls, we stand up the walls and the trusses and all the interior walls. And by doing that, they're looking that they can truly scale each of their factories. They got three right now, one in India, one in Mexico, and one in Kansas City, Missouri. We could build more, of course, very easily, but they can scale those to be five times the productivity if all they did was foundation. So it's a monolithical pour, so you get your footing and everything all in one pour. And the nice thing about it is,
Hold on, Chris. 314 area code, your mic is open.
LA, hang on a second.
Right,
did you contact with that lady?
I called her twice, left a message, and I haven't heard anything back.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
But I did call twice.
I heard you talk about metal studs. You know, in those monolithic domes, all the interior studs, wall studs, and even framing is done out of metal studs. And he's right. The insurance on a home like that may be $300 a year because nothing in the thing that can catch on fire. And the only thing that concerns that your wire has to be armored cable when it passes this. But they go up fast and they are, it's just like wood studs. It's just made out of that galvanized metal. So that's a good construction if you wanted to look ahead and save money on other pertinent costs like insurance and so forth.
Right. Well, I've seen quite a bit of buildings, you know, use metal stud, I mean, metal framing. Sure.
They use it in commercial buildings every day in every city across the country. There's not a city in this country that is not building a commercial building with using metal studs. They're all building it. The difference is they're doing it commercially and not residentially. So we need to.
Why do you think that?
Because a commercial building is worth more money. So they build it with a better product. I'm telling you, I have a product that's 10 times better than a residential product. So why are you not using it? Because we need to educate people so they will use it.
Lumber costs so much money. Now, I know people that build homes out in the wilderness. And what they do, they carry with them their own timber mill, which is portable, but a bandsaw. And they cut down the timber around where they're going to build a home. But I built a house, designed it. I used 2x8 for my wall studs. That was just something I wanted to do. But I would imagine
you know that
tiny homes will smaller spaces.
Most people want to do tiny homes with buildings and wood.
Whenever they do use the sawmill and they do that, the one thing that you're not getting out of using a fresh tree that you just cut down and saw into the planks that you need is you're not getting to cure it. One thing about wood, even after it's dry, completely dry, and they give you a building product out of it, if you go in your house and you have wooden trusses, I can about guarantee that your interior walls have cracks in the angles where the tape for the drywall is. There's a reason for that. It's because when the weather gets cold, and when it gets hot, wood moves, and it will move the entire history of that house the whole time. And the way they construct homes anymore, the trusses, you know, you got a 30, 40-foot truss going across that house. Out there in the middle, that thing's liable to raise up an inch and a half. Screws, and they'll pop in. I know people's seen it, and you'll see the screw sticking down in the angle or in the middle of your ceiling. And that's because that truss pulled away from the sheetrock, but when it went back down, it brought the screw with it or the nail with it. And because the nail, it pulls nails. And that's one of the things that by utilizing this material, it does not move in the weather. So the way your angles are is the way they're going to be. And the house don't, if it weighs half the weight of wood, so it puts half the pressure on your foundation, and you put the same foundation in. So any way you look at it, you know, by utilizing a superior product, you're going to get a superior product. And that's, and right now, you know, we're losing 85% of our union workers that are building the commercial stuff, and we got kids that don't want to go out there and do it. But if we went and showed them that they could actually work and not break a sweat, I'm not saying go stand there with 12 people and stand there and hold a sign. I'm saying, here's your sign. Put a screw gun in your hand, put a screw in, and save a life. Change a life. Change your life. You know, people are living by pistol grips. They have for as long as America has been America. But it's been a pistol grip that hurts people or it intimidates them. I don't want this one to intimidate you. I want it to initiate you into something new. You don't have to worry about a bullet coming out of the end of it. But as many times as you can pull that trigger, you can save a life.
Right. Well, let's pick up on this. What's tomorrow? Wednesday. Chris and Bianchi and all others. Everyone have a good... Oh, wait a minute. I'm pressing the wrong buttons. Everyone have a good rest of the day. We're going to pick up on this. But like I said, we want to look at backyard wealth and then how we can organize wherever we are to tap in on this and make money.